Fedheads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 83, Spotlight on Crux. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, broadcast on CigarFederation.com and, of course, YouTube, and all of our people on the Armed Forces Radio Network, wherever you're stationed in the world. Thanks for tuning into our show. We do appreciate it. I'm here with my co-host, Robbie Rass. This show is brought to you by Gurkha, the manufacturers of the world's finest cigars. You can try the new 93-rated Heritage today at your local shop. Check it out. Rob, what's going on in sunny California today, brother?
A lot of bad baseball. But beyond that, things are good. Yeah, the Giants are falling apart, man.
That sure sets the pace for the night, doesn't it? Like, there's nothing like your team just crapping the bed to be like, boy, can I go home and have a drink tonight?
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to where we talk NFL later. It's Niners won. What the hell?
It was a very odd week. We can talk about that in the episode.
We'll get to it.
It's going to be an interesting conversation.
But yeah, I'm definitely. I mean, we got this guild, which is fantastic. This is the first time I've smoked it in the Corona. So it's got a bit more of a kick to it. There's a bit more spice. I can't remember what size I smoked before.
I want to say it was like the Robusto Grande.
Yeah, something like that.
It was like a group review, and that was like a pre-release sample because that was all the way back in like 2015.
I actually smoked this. In IPCPR or whatever, or leading up to, and I really enjoyed it. I think it was a Toro that I smoked or something. It was the size that Logan said was awful.
Yeah.
And I actually really enjoyed it, and they gave us some samples of some different sizes. So this is the first time with the Corona, and it's got a bit more of a kick from the spice standpoint. Real nice flavor, though. Let's get in, and I don't have the specs of the cigar in front of me. Do you want to talk about the specs on that? Do you have throwing the bus?
Yeah, no, I totally do. And you know me, I like to prep before a show because who likes sleep? It's a waste of time. So it does come a variety of different sizes. I'm pretty big on Coronas. If you serve me up a Corona, you're already in my good books. This is a 5.5 by 42, so just a long skinny, and that's, you know, right in my wheelhouse. Ecuador and Habano wrapper, and I mean, Ecuador and Habano.
It's hard to get away from how good that wrapper is, man.
It's such a good wrapper. Ecuador is really killing it with wrappers, and you get that Habano wrapper from Ecuador, forget about it. Nicaraguan filler, binders, and an MSRP of $6.99, which is super reasonable.
Wow.
And the one thing I would say on this cigar is that, and I'm just going to turn my phone off here because I'm a pro and forgot to put my phone on silent, and it is that time of the year where work does not leave me alone for 5 seconds, so it would just be dinging all day long. But one of the things we commented on when we first smoked it is it started out sort of good. Like, it's got some really great flavors. And by the halfway point, it was just knocking me around. It's a very deceptively full-bodied cigar. A lot of full-bodied cigars kind of slap you around to start with and really let you know they're there. This one is the ninja. It sneaks up on you. It really gets you about the halfway point. And I remember when Jared smoked it. Jared isn't really in the full-bodied category. He likes those sort of medium plus, and, you know, those Connecticut shades. So I think the Crux Guild was a little bit too much. I feel like this would be right in Logan's wheelhouse if he didn't have the palate of a donkey.
That's funny.
I can say that because he's not tuned in at all.
Yeah, copy that. I was actually just looking up to see what sizes this comes in. They do list it as, you know what, Robusto Extra, I believe, is what I smoked.
That's what we smoked.
I wasn't in the review. I'm trying to figure out the one that I smoked recently. I don't think I was in the review from last year. And I'm not absolutely positive that that's the same blend, because I know that this was supposed to come out, and then it was it was tweaked a little bit. It was held back for whatever reason. I don't remember and I could be making all that up, but the size that I smoked was the 5.25 by 54. And what I liked about it was I don't really do, you know, full strength cigars that much myself. It's just really not my flavor profile. And I mean, if the strength comes with flavor, then, you know, then so be it. But I don't go for strength for the sake of strength. And what I liked about it, especially in that size, was it's definitely full flavor, full body cigar.
Yeah.
Full strength, but it was really, really smooth. It wasn't like you're just getting blasted with pepper and spice, and it's just everything's overpowering. It wasn't like that at all. It was really, really smooth, smoothed out flavor profile, and I really, really dug that. A lot of earth, a lot of spice. Not a lot of sweetness, but I did enjoy that. With this, I'm getting a bit more spice than I got last time. And actually, I'm kind of excited for my third pairing that we'll get to here in a minute, because I have a feeling that's going to work out pretty well. But we'll get started with these pairings here. We've got some really good stuff lined up.
We got some really good stuff. One of the things I just want to comment on is that, you know, we've smoked quite a bit of Crux product over the last couple of years, which, you know, I love to smoke as much of a portfolio from a cigar manufacturer as I can. And I have to say, there's really nothing that they've put out that I didn't think was at least really good. Like, it's ranged from really good to excellent. So, you know, I really like the Guild, the Connoisseur, which I'm sure we're going to be doing a show on, was kind of the one that I really, really blew my skirt up. So I'm kind of looking forward to doing the show with that. Although I remember that the Connoisseur was a little bit more nuanced. This one, like you said, it's very full flavored, but in a nice way. And I like full bodied cigars, but I also like full bodied cigars that, like you say, they're not just slapping your palate around like it's a rented mule. It does sneak up on you, but that's why it sneaks up on you, because you're smoking it, you're really enjoying the flavors, and then all of a sudden at the halfway point, bam, you're like, whoa, where did that come from?
Pow!
Pow! Bam! So, anyways,
that was fun.
Just letting off some steam. It's been a bit of a week.
It has been a week. Yeah, for me, the Crux portfolio is full of a lot of nice cigars. For me, the Guild is by far and away the best cigar that they produce, in my opinion. And with the runner up being the Passport.
What about that the Passport or the PB? Was it the PB5?
PB5. I haven't smoked. I've got one, but I haven't smoked it yet.
So good.
Yeah, I know that we've. That's again one of those things where the review gets done, so it's like, oh well, I got to put this aside for now until I get a chance to smoke something that I'm not reviewing. But those are the two of the portfolio that I really enjoyed. And the Skeeters is pretty good too. The little Skeeters. There's a few that I haven't smoked. I haven't smoked the Sports, which I think I have some, but I haven't smoked yet.
Sports is quite good too.
And
they're all good.
The Nymphomaniac Dark I haven't smoked.
I haven't smoked that one either. The original Nymphomaniac I smoked, I really liked. And wasn't it Jared that just absolutely went bananas on those Skeeters?
Absolutely.
Hey, if you guys have any review samples over, can you send those over? I really like that. I can't find it right now.
It was the Skeeters and the Nymphomaniac. He gave the Nymphomaniac like 150 rating.
Yeah, I think Logan had to edit the score because it's like, bro, we can't give over 100%. That's not how it works.
I thought that was a good cigar. A lot of people really loved it. For me, I just thought it was good. Everything that I've had from them has been good. I haven't had anything that I've was disappointed that I was smoking. So, and I know they had a limited release that they had, the IPCPR limited release. I haven't smoked that either. That came out, that actually had the IPCPR logo on there. I've never seen anybody else do that. Cool guys. We'll probably have them on Cigar Chat here pretty soon. And so I'm glad that we're going after this cigar, because it's definitely a good smoke, and firing it up in this size is, it's interesting. I have a feeling it's going to be a little too spicy for me, but we'll see how it goes.
I mean, it's been a while since I smoked, but I feel like I remember it being one of these cigars where it started out quite spicy, and then the spice kind of let up at the halfway point. Mm. But by that point, the strength of the cigar really punched you in the mouth, so you're like, whoa. But let's talk about our pairings, because it's a whiskey kind of night, and I'm excited to pour some whiskey. I'm excited to drink some whiskey. I'm kind of cheating already because I need some whiskey. You know, my pivot is the Scotch and Malt Whiskey Society bottle. This bottle got empty a little bit last night. I was at a bit of a private tasting and got to try some really special stuff. Thanks very much to Kurt and the rest of the gang there. That was a really cool thing. This is from the Malt Society. This bottle started out mostly full, but when everyone tried it, they went, yeah, that's really good. I'm going to have another one. Scotch and Malt Whiskey Society does single cask bottlings. You can go to smws.com if you're in the States, smws.ca. They actually have chapters in 18 countries around the world, so there's a lot of chapters around the world if you want to be a member. Membership has its privileges, and one of the privileges is getting your hands on these bottles. And the thing that I really like is that you have a bottle, like let's say you've got a favorite distillery, like let's just say Springbank or Laphroaig is like your favorite distillery. I've consistently found that the single casks they get from those distilleries are you can get the core element. It's almost like when you have a cigar blend and you know that factory, you can taste that factory out of the cigar blend, but it's something you've never tasted from that factory before. And that's what it is for me, is that I know it's a Lafroy, or I know in this case it's a Springbank, but it's something I've never tasted from that distillery before. And that's what I like. And that's why, fortunately or unfortunately, you have a product, it's that bottling is unique. Once it's gone, it's gone. You're never going to have that same flavor expression again. So, you know, it's kind of cool. The other thing I like is that it is single cask bottling. So it's straight from the cask, straight to the bottle. It's not reduced at all. So what it was in the cask is exactly what you're getting in the bottle. In this case, it's only 13 years old, which a lot of people would go, well, I don't really drink anything less than 15 years. But because it's a single cask bottling, you get so much flavor out of this, where, you know, with some of these Malt Society bottlings, they have 8-year expressions, 5-year expressions that are like amazing, outstanding. Cask strength, of course, 53.9%, and this is too cool for school, the 27102, and they say ginger nuts in a creamy latte with mint chocolate ganache. Ginger nuts. Old leather books and wax church pews. Okay. Puff of hickory smoke, touch of marshmallow and peppered tuna steak, ginger snap baskets with red berries, and yes, it does say baskets, salty french fries and chocolate milkshake. I don't know about any of that, but I know it's darn good. The reason it's so good is because it was finished in, matured in a ex-sherry refill hogshead. So it's basically a sherry hogshead cask, hogshead being a little bit smaller. You get a lot more of that sherry influence. And I'll hold it up here. You can see that color. Oh, yeah. That's what I love to see. It's not colored, because none of the Malt Society bottlings are colored. I mean, it's that deep amber. And when I see that, I go, it's sherry time. And I love me some sherry time.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of sherry time as well. I'm going with some samples, courtesy of our host, John the Cigar Surgeon. So thank you for that. John, appreciate it. I'm starting with the Glenmorangie 18-year-old, extremely rare. As you can see, much lighter on the end of the spectrum. I don't have the bottle to hold up. I've got this little bottle to hold up. Let's see. It's got, Glenmorangie, Highland Distillery, the Glenmorangie 18. Their website was actually down, so I'm pulling this off of masterofmalt.com. It's 18-year-old, matured for 15 years in ex-bourbon casks before finishing in Oloroso sherry cask. Boom.
Oh, baby.
That's all you got to tell me is sherry cask. Yeah. It's an exquisite tropical fruit-driven Glenmorangie. Now, Glenmorangie is always on the lighter side of things.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit concerned about how this pairing is going to go. I've been cheating a little bit. I feel like that some of the nuance is getting bowled over by the cigar. The nose, creamy honey with Greek yogurt. Grapefruit, exotic spice. I like exotic spice. That's very nice and nondescript. Berry compote is quite descript, actually, and I do love berry compote. Palate is tinned citrus. What does that mean?
I think that's citrus that's been put in a can, like maybe a tin of peaches or orange.
Oh,
or,
okay.
I think that's what I mean. That's the tinned, I'm assuming, is an English expression.
Yeah, so like a canned fruit. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's very creamy, it says here, with some honey and lychee. The finish is very good.
That's very descriptive. Thank you, Glenn.
Yes, it is very good. A big oak and citrus peels. So for me, and it's funny that they say Greek yogurt, because there's kind of a cool creaminess to it. And you can, saying something smells cool is kind of strange, but there's definitely some of that sweetness there on the nose, a little bit of fruit. And on the palate, it's very, very nice. It's getting a little bit run over by the cigar here, but I'm curious to see how your pairing is going.
It's good. I think one of the things I really like about this particular whiskey is there's certain whiskeys that have a dry mouthfeel to them. And we've talked more about mouthfeel as the show has progressed. And what I really like about this expression is it's got a really great oily mouthfeel. So I take a sip and it's extremely satisfying because it really coats my palate. So I find myself taking a small sip and I get a big amount of oily mouthfeel to it, which is satisfying. I get this wonderful stewed fruit and pepper and spices and lots of body. And the finish starts out quite strong and then immediately falls off. So sometimes with sherry finishes, it can be quite strong. And I think I might find in my second expression here that it's going to be quite strong. I mentioned that this is the 27105. 27 is the decoded distillery code for Springbank. And Springbank is one of those distilleries that I feel like they get looked over a lot. They're a Campbelltown distillery, and they've kind of not been as popular as maybe some of the Speyside distilleries or Lowland distilleries or even the Islay distilleries. But for me, Springbank makes a fantastic product. It's very interesting. And this pairing is exactly what I wanted. This cigar has so much body. I mean, you know, we're really only a half inch, maybe three quarters of an inch in. And I'm actually slowing down my retrohales because I was retrohaling kind of every second puff, and my nose is just screaming because the spices are so full. They're not biting me, but it's just so much for my palate to take and my nose to take that I can't do it every other puff. And that's really the sign of a full-bodied cigar. Again, you know, you don't feel like it's like a Roma Craft Neanderthal, where it's just, you know, all levers to 10, but you can feel that intensity of flavor. So I think the sweetness off the whiskey does a great job of counteracting that spice in the cigar. Because as you mentioned, the cigar, you know, with the Ecuadorian Habano, a lot of times it's not like broadleaf. You don't get a lot of sweetness off of it. So the sweetness from the sherry fills in that gap for me. Just quickly remind our audience that you're tuned into Sharing Our Pairings episode 83, Spotlight on Crux. Broadcast around the world in the Armed Forces Radio Network on CigarFederation.com and all the podcast apps in the world. All you need to do is search for Cigar Federation. One word, you'll find us. You can download it, listen live. I like to listen to it on the way to show and listen to all the mistakes I made. How's the first pairing going for you, Rob?
You know, it's funny you were talking about the retrohale because mine, I'm probably about an inch in, and I might be a little bit ahead of you, and I was smoking a little bit faster. It's starting to level out a little bit. Like I had mentioned, the larger ring gauge did that Robusto Extra. It's starting to smooth out a little bit. You're still getting that spice. For me, it's like a red pepper flake on the retrohale. It's definitely hot, but it doesn't hurt. You know, it's not one of those ones that really is like burning the hair in your nose. It's a nice retrohale. I'm retrohaling on every puff. It's not tearing me up. But it's definitely smoothing out as we get closer to this, the end of the first third here.
Yeah.
For this pairing to work, I have to do too much work. I have to kind of take a sip of water, let my mouth kind of recuperate. I take a sip of the Glenmorangie 18, and I can really enjoy it. And it has that, it's funny you were mentioning that oily mouthfeel. I didn't really know of a way to say it, but oily is a good way to put it, where it does kind of coat the palate. And it's got that nice little spice from the sherry cask. It's definitely a lot of fruit, some sweetness in there as well. I think it's going to be fantastic when I have it on its own and I really enjoy it. Unfortunately, I didn't take any sips before I started smoking the cigar. But I'm glad I've still got a nice little pour here, courtesy of John, that I'm going to enjoy probably later tonight. When I give my palate a little bit of time to rest in between puffs, and I take a sip of water and a sip of this Glenmorangie, and I get the full effect, the pairing does go quite nicely because it's got a little bit of spice in the finish and some sweetness that leads into that, picks up the earthiness and the spiciness from the cigar. They kind of blend pretty well at that point. If I go take a puff and I take a sip, I'm not getting much from the whiskey until that spicy little burn on the end. So the cigar is a bit too strong for this particular whiskey. Probably should have known that coming in, but whatever. I'm all over the map with my pairing here today, so I wanted to try to get something that was a little bit on the lighter side. And I think there's just too much nuance that gets lost. It doesn't really impact the cigar at all. The cigar's still smoking great. But when you're talking about sipping on an 18-year-old whiskey, you're going to want to get all that nuance. So I would recommend probably staying away from just about everything Glenmorangie offers if you're going with a pairing here. The cigar is just a little bit too strong.
And I think what's great for that about that Glenmorangie, and we're talking about pairings with the Scotch, is that the Glenmorangie is full flavor, and this is a great example of full flavor, not full bodied. Even though that Glenmorangie is, I believe it's cask strength. Like I think it was bottled at 52% or 51%. So it's got a lot of alcohol strength, but the flavor profile is not full strength. So you know the cigar is full strength and full bodied. but the whiskey is full body, not full strength. So I think in a way, it's got so many great flavors, but as you said, it just can't stand up to the cigar. I cheated because I've had all the whiskeys I'm having tonight, so I kind of had advanced knowledge of. In fact, I think I even wrote in my review that this cigar would pair really well with a big, heavy sherryed scotch, and this is definitely living up to that, because I think sherryed scotches, because they are so full-bodied, stands up really nicely to this cigar and really complements it nicely. I think I'm probably ready to go on to my second pairing of the night. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm in. I'll just jump right in since you threw it my way. My second pairing of the evening is Oban Little Bay. And we've talked a lot about Oban. As you can see, this one's a little bit darker. I can kind of compare the two here. It's kind of hard to tell, but if you're watching the video, you can see it's got a little bit more of a honeyed color to it. And Oban Little Bay, which I've had before, but not on the show, it is bottled at 43% ABV, another Highland distillery. And there's no age statement on this one.
No.
let's see, blah, blah, blah. It is, they use whiskey matured and refill American oak hogshead, European oak sherry casks, and refill casks with new ends for this. What does that mean? When they change the base of the cask?
Yeah, I think that's what it means. They put new caps on the cask.
Oh, interesting.
Caps.
Yep. Interesting. Wonder what the thought process is behind that.
Well, I think when you get new wood, you get a lot more characteristics from the wood because, and you know, this is where the economics kind of come in. You can reuse a cask multiple times, but every time you use that cask, it's losing, you know, 2% or 5% of the body that it imparts. If you put new ends on it, and I could be completely wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's what it means. You put new ends on it, you're essentially imparting some of that new fresh wood flavor. So some of those vanilla characters, some of the, you know, typically American oak, you'll get that imparted to the whiskey without overpowering the sherry.
Interesting. So you're giving a little bit more life to that cask. And sherry casks, especially, I would think sherry casks are going to be harder and harder to come by. So you're giving a little bit more life to that. Like I said, 43% ABV, which is kind of standard, really, when you start talking about scotches. It's one thing I've noticed.
Yeah.
The nose on this, they say dry apple chips, floral herbs, chopped mint, candied orange, and a touch of milky coffee, which I think I get, definitely get the apple and that candied orange. And there is almost a little bit of mint on that. I don't get the milky coffee. fancy... Those fancy chocolates with flakes of sea salt on the palate. That's exactly the verbiage here. Those fancy chocolates with the flakes of sea salt.
You know, those fancy chocolates that you get.
Pound cake. I love pound cake. Topped with, oh boy, demerara. Demerara sugar? I don't know what that is.
No idea.
And cinnamon. And citrus returns to the mid palate. The finish is spice with cinnamon and ginger. So I feel like I haven't taken any sips of this yet. And this runs for about $60 a bottle, I think. Freedom dollars.
Freedom dollars.
And just for perspective, that Glenmorangie is about $100. So this is about half the price. But Oban's got a little bit more flavor characteristic to it. That's why I went second here. The ABV is about the same. I have a feeling that spicy ginger finish might bode a little bit better here with this particular cigar. So I'm going to jump into this. Tell me about your second cigar, whiskey.
Yeah. So commenting on this crux is it kind of migrates from the first third to the second third. I remember this cigar. So and it's really intense spices, almost falling to a light plus medium minus by moving into the middle third here. And there's some creaminess coming through here, which I really enjoy. It's a great counterpoint to that spice. So now it's kind of balanced between the spice and the creaminess. Going into my second whiskey, I'm keeping it in-house with a Springbank. I'm going with another Springbank, and this is intentional because this is one of the most heavily sherried whiskeys that I've got in my collection next to it's probably one of the most sherried whiskeys I've got. And aptly named the Springbank Sherrywood 17. It's a sherry bomb. 52.3%. I love those cask strength whiskeys. It's got a really nice dark color to it. I'll kind of hold it up here as I gently set that bottle down, because we don't want any accidents here in China Repairing. Just got to drink responsible as well. And again, it's got that really dark color, although you can see it's not quite as dark as mine. I'll hold up my first whiskey here for the audience members. The first one is more of a dark amber, and the second one's more of a golden honey. And that's, you know, we talk about this is a 17-year-old whiskey. This is a 13-year-old whiskey. This is heavily sherried. This is not. So you can see the difference that different wood imparts on color. Ultimately, does it impart different flavors? For sure. And you can't necessarily judge a whiskey by its color. And, you know, that's kind of, it's kind of like judging a cigar by the wrapper. If you were to judge this Crux Guild, thinking, well, it's got a light tan wrapper, it's probably really mild, you're going to be in for a shocker. And, you know, that's kind of the trap. You can't judge a whiskey by its color. You can't judge a cigar by its wrapper. So this is Springbank. Springbank is a Campbelltown distillery. I talked a little bit about that. Campbelltown is located on the west coast of Scotland. It's a very small producing region. I think there's only a handful of distilleries out there. They use the Crosshill Loch as their water source. Founded in 1828, although, as rumor goes, they're illegally distilling 4 or 6 years prior to officially opening. I think that was pretty widespread in Scotland. They like their spirits. It was kind of cool. It was founded by the brothers Archibald and Hugh Mitchell, and it stayed in the family. So, you know, a couple hundred years later, it's still within the family, which I think is cool. So this is, you know, the sherry scotch, and I'm going to take a little nose here. I was kind of cheating while you're talking. And it's very, very different than the first Springbank. It's more of like a honeyed heather. It really belies the amount of sherry that's in there, because you would expect a really peppery, fruity nose, and instead, you know, I get a lot of sort of rich fruit, like bright fruit, rather like a melony fruit instead of a stewed fruit, and I get a lot of honey and like a rich, sweet heather, almost like a flower in it. And I'm excited to take some sips here, so I'll let you talk about how that Oban Little Bay is going for your pairing.
The pairing here is far superior. It's not a superior whiskey by any means. It's very good, but the pairing just works so much better. The Oban Little Bay has a brininess to it, and we talked about that a little bit before the show. Usually, think Oban is a little bit peated, for the most part, but this one's not peated at all, and it's got it hits that, it's got that kind of saltiness. It hits the side of the tongue. It's got some, like a salted caramel, toffee flavor in there. There's definitely that spice on the finish, definitely getting that cinnamon as well they were talking about. I don't get a ton of floral notes. I definitely don't get that coffee that they were talking about. A lot of citrus. There's kind of a deeper sweetness that I think they were talking about, that pound cake flavor. But this has a flavor profile that can stand up to the cigar for sure. And that salty caramel toffee kind of flavor is very, very interesting when it's juxtaposed to this earthy spiciness that you get out of the Crux. It's starting to, the cigar that is, excuse me, starting to smooth out. The profile smoothing out. The spice is nowhere near what it was at the beginning. Like you were saying, John, you were definitely, you nailed it there, that it is definitely smoothed out towards the middle, almost taking on a bit of a creamy characteristic. Not overly creamy, but creamy by comparison to where it was.
Yeah.
Still earth forward in the flavor profile. A lot of spice still there, but it's nowhere near where it was. The strength, you can feel it. It's kicking up a notch.
Oh, yeah.
It's you get to that midpoint, you're like, okay, now, yeah, hey, what's happening? It's like you get halfway through a beer that's 10%, you start to realize, wow, this is 10%.
I feel good all of a sudden.
Yeah. Well, what happened? You know, who turned out the lights? But this pairing, far superior than where we were. That saltiness that hits the sides of the tongue with that bright toffee note, the caramel, a little bit of chocolate in there as well, kind of on that chocolate pound cake sweetness there. There's a lot going on both sides of the ball here with the Oban Little Bay and with the Crux Guild. Definitely, they're not butting heads as far as trying to dominate your profile or your palate, if that makes sense. You're getting a lot from the whiskey, you get a lot from the cigar, and it's playing really well together, not getting in each other's way. I don't know if they're enhancing each other in any way, but there's definitely mutual respect, if you want to say it that way. And they're each getting their time to shine on the palate, not overpowering each other in any way. It's just a really nice, cooperative pairing, if that makes sense. I know it doesn't make it sound very pleasant, but it is actually very good.
Just a reminder to the audience, you're tuned in to Sharing Our Pairings, episode 82, Spotlight on Crux. I'm your host, John, the Cigar Surgeon, joined by my co-host, Robbie Rass. We are smoking the Crux Guild in the Corona size. We are broadcast around the world and on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thanks so much for all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners. Wherever you're tuned in the world, hope you are staying entertained by our shenanigans. So what's interesting is I think we're kind of having a similar experience, even though the distilleries are very far apart. This is where the region can kind of be deceptive. People talk about in the past a region had a particular flavor profile. That's not really the case anymore. What's interesting about this Campbelltown whiskey, and what I like about Campbelltown whiskeys, is that it is sherry. It is very sherry, and it's a different kind of sherry than what you might get out of, say, a Glenrothes or something else that's been finished or completely aged in sherry. I do get that wonderful, rich stewed fruit, but along with that, I get that briny saltiness that you're getting. And again, because it's a West Coast distillery, that's coming as a part of the fact those casks are sitting on the coast and there's a coastal influence on that. And, you know, you were talking about how it was kind of the flavors were interacting. And I would kind of say, like, if you took a flavor wheel and you plop the cigar and this whiskey down on it, they kind of fill the map. Like, really, I think the only thing missing here is a little bit of earthiness. Other than that, it kind of takes all the dials, turns them up to 9 or 10 across the flavor profile. And that's good because, like you said, they're not competing with each other. I don't know if they're necessarily complementing each other, but I get wonderful sherry. I get, and again, the Crux Guild has sort of morphed into this great, creamy, spicy, and I think that continues on for most of the middle third, if I remember right. And that's great. I love that creamy spice with the wonderful stewed fruit and that salty brininess off the whiskey. It works. It's harmonious. That's probably the word I would use.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, so instead of being complimenting or contrasting, it's just harmony, and it's a good harmony. I mean, this is, you know, we could stop the show now, and I could sit here and just drink this Springbank 17 Sherwood and smoke this Crux Guild, and I'd be a happy camper, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the only thing that you said that I feel like we're in a little bit of a disagreement is you said there was some earthiness missing. I get plenty of earthiness out of this cigar.
Yeah, that's true. Now that I'm retrohaling, because I think I'm a little behind you, I'm getting a little bit of almost that San Andreas earth.
Yeah, it's kind of like a dark, dirty, almost spicy earth. It's got some stank to it. You know what I mean? Like it's got a little stank face. Yeah. And it is creaming out. That's a horrible turn of phrase there. It is getting a bit creamy on the profile, and I'm getting more kind of oaky notes out of it that I wasn't really getting before out of the cigar. And I don't know if that's a product of the whiskey or not. I don't remember that when I was smoking it before, but that kind of just oak wood flavor is coming out of there. Maybe a little bit of leathery type notes are in there as well.
And cigar has so much body.
Yeah, it's got a ton of body, and there's
so much body.
And there's a lot going on to it too. It's not just, hey, we're just gonna bowl you over with, you know, a ton of pepper or a ton of this or a ton of that. There's not a ton of anything, but except a ton of flavor, if that makes sense. And it's all kinds of different things coming together. I like that term, harmonious. I think what really makes this pairing work though is that brininess, that salty characteristic where it really does. After each puff of the cigar, you take a sip, and it wakes up the palate a little bit more. That it's such a unique flavor. It's unique to the whiskey. It's not unique in whiskey, but it's unique to this whiskey. It's so far from what you're tasting in the cigar that it really kind of wakes you up every time you take a sip from it, where you're not getting stuck in the same rut of flavor, flavor, flavor. There's that saltiness that kind of, boom, it, you know, wakes you up a little bit. But, I dig this cigar, man. And it's so far out of out of my comfort zone as far as the cigars that I seek out to smoke on a regular basis. But this is a cigar I definitely wouldn't smoke it first thing in the morning, but it's something that any other time of day, right after lunch, right after dinner, I definitely eat something before I smoke it because it's got a kick.
Like I said, don't let that wrapper fool you. I mean, even in the Corona size, it's all coming back to me. Like, and I think Jared commented on it, and I commented on it, that you don't really notice that until you get into that middle third and you're like, oh, this is a big cigar. I mean, like Rob said, if you smoke this in the morning, you'd not be a happy camper. This is something you want to have something on your stomach, maybe a Coke standing by, because this cigar is no joke, but in a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to pair it with some bourbon. You know, to get a little bit more spiciness and a big bourbon, like a Booker's or something like that. I always think of Booker's. That's cask strength. It's got some kick to it, a lot of mouthfeel to it, a lot of flavor. And I think we could do a cocktail show with this and go with, you know, I'm thinking an old fashioned would be fantastic. Old fashioned would be fantastic.
With that citrus quality?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's another thing that's coming out of the Oban Little Bay is that citrus, that kind of orange peel flavor that you're going to get. Maybe that's why I'm thinking old fashioned, but a really nice and nicely done old fashioned with Blanton's. I'll forget about it. Blanton's old fashioned. Woo! Man, I want one of those. I don't have any Blanton's to tell my wife to pick some up on the way home. But I think that would be a real nice pairing, or you know, something that doesn't have, it's not going to have too much sweetness to it. I definitely wouldn't want to go, as far as a cocktail is concerned, anything that's got lemon or lime. I'd want to stick with orange as my citrus.
Yeah, like a mojito would be a wrong choice here.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, although rum would be really nice with this too, where you kind of balance that spice out with some sweetness. So
big Florida Canyon 18, or actually, I'll tell you what, Aranza Kappa.
Oh, there you go.
Forget about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Or that XO that we call that XO. Woo! That was that needs to somehow find its way into my bar. That's a Kappa XO. And,
I think I lost Rob there for a quick second.
Oh, did I dip out?
Oh, it just dipped out. We had a bit of a jitter, but carry on.
I was just prattling on about the Aranza Kappa XO and how that needs to find its way into my bar at home.
You and me both, brother.
Yeah, no kidding. And that would fit real nicely with the cigar. And one thing I do know it pairs really well with is that Protocol Lancero. We did that at IFCPR. That was... I feel like we can't go a show of any kind without mentioning that cigar.
Cubana Caño.
Yeah, and we're not even smoking it tonight.
We're not even smoking it. Gotta give some love.
Yeah, no kidding.
So we have a great question from Harley Holmes, and I think now that we're at the halfway point of the cigar and the strength of the cigar is really starting to rock and roll, it's like making my ears ring like a rock concert. Harley asks, what do you think, what food would go well with the Crux Guild? Well, this is the exact kind of cigar that, you know, I could see like a really great, like a prime rib or Angus beef burger, like just a big beefy burger would be great with some barbecue sauce. Steak would be a no-brainer. A really nice pulled pork sandwich with, maybe like a nice, I don't know, some kind, something on there like a citrus, some kind of citrus finish on that pulled pork. That would probably be my jam right now.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't smoke and eat very often. You can't really do it in restaurants around here in California. And if I'm eating at home, I'm inside. I don't smoke inside, so I smoke in my office. But when we were in Portland, there was a bar called Green Dragon where I met up with a few cigar guys, and we had lunch, and we all shared. We didn't share cigars, but we all had. We were smoking some Fuente Rosados. It was Friday, so BMW Mark brought some Fuente Rosados for everybody. And I was smoking that, and I got some pulled pork sliders for lunch. And as soon as you said pulled pork, I was pointing at you, and I was like, yeah,
spicy
absolutely.
Mayo on it.
Like a pulled pork slider with like a nice sauce. I mean, the nice barbecue sauce, like a tangy barbecue sauce, would be fantastic with this. Because you get a little bit of sweetness, you get a little bit of that tang to it, but you're also, it's heavy enough that it's going to carry on. I think you nailed it with a big burger, too, is kind of a no-brainer. I'm thinking like a big burger that has like almost like a blue cheese on it or something would be really, really
good.
That'd
be really interesting, actually.
Just to throw a little kind of curveball in there, because that blue cheese has got that funk to it, you know?
It's got that funk.
And I love blue cheese, but I had a big Angus steak burger with a little bit of a blue cheese melt on top or something like that. And it was fantastic. I feel like something like that, something hefty. I mean, you're not going to want to have like a turkey sandwich with this.
No.
You know, you're going to want to go, you want something definitely on the more bold end. There's a barbecue place out here called Kinder's. And I think they're just local. but they do just their basic barbecue sandwich. It's fantastic. That'd be perfect with this. Anything with, like you said, a little bit of spicy mayo, maybe a tangy barbecue sauce, and you're gonna be good to go.
All right, so I am I'm kind of looking forward to this last one because we're kind of both in the same. We didn't really coordinate, which is kind of fun for me to see what different pairing combinations we come up with. So we're kind of in the same ballpark, although definitely at the different PDNs. Because I went with the peatiest whiskey on the market, the Octomore. This is the Scottish barley. This is the 06.1, 167. And the 167 stands for peated parts per million. And to give you a sense of it, because Rob's about to bust into that quarter cask. And that quarter cask is just like, it's like smoke in a glass. Like it's just campfire and peat and burning rubber and creosote. And I think it's like 45 or 48. This is at 167.
Hmm. Whoa.
So, yeah. So it's like you had a beer with 110 IBUs. Like it's just, in fact, it'd be like a beer with 125 IBUs because it's just so far off the chart. It's not even funny. And yet, you know, part of the reason I picked up this bottle is because it's got so much nuance. I think this is only a five-year-old whiskey, which putting this much body in a five-year-old whiskey with this much peat, and I think this bad boy is at 57% ABV. So 57%, aged 5 years, 167 ppm. It's just a monster, and you can see the back of that. I'm a bit of a fanboy. That is Jim McEwen. Signed that bottle for me. I was at a tasting. It was kind of a cool experience for me. Jim's retired since, but that was kind of a cool experience for me. And if I hold it up, you can see it's you know, it's like a hay color. But that belies the amount of body. This is, I mean, beyond the fact that it's immensely peated, it is incredibly full-bodied. So I'm interested to see if this Crux Guild can slap this Scotch round.
Yeah, so as John mentioned, I'm going with a Laphroaig quarter cask, which, again, I don't have the bottle because these were samples that John sent me. But it's actually, it's a bit lighter, you know, than you would think. I mean, you assume, or at least I would assume, that, you know, Laphroaig coming out of the glass would be like black, you know, like it would just be so, so dark. And this is actually on the lighter, really, really light honey, almost like a lemony yellow, really, in color. It's a single malt quarter cask and offers a ton of flavor due to its double maturation in two barrels made of American oak. So still maturing whiskey from our standard ex-bourbon barrels transferred into quarter casks and left to rest in the warehouse just a stone's throw away from the Atlantic shore. So you are, like you say, the placement of where these things are happening, you're going to get there's some brininess to it because there's salt in the air. You know, they're going to pick some of that up. And again, John can talk in more detail about this. I can't find the ABV on this. I don't see that.
Quarter cask, I think. Yeah. I want to say it's 43.
Okay, yeah, I don't see it listed anywhere, so it must just be pretty standard. Their color, they call it full sparkling gold, which is a much better way to put it than I did. I think that's a pretty good descriptor. The nose...
48, pardon me, 96
okay.
Proof.
The nose, burning embers of peat in a crofter's fireplace. Mm-hmm. Now, it's peat, big time, right? I don't know about a crofter's fireplace, if that makes any difference, but there's definitely a ton of peat. And what's interesting is that they point out that you're going to get hints of coconut and banana aromas. And there's always been this kind of sweetness, like a dull sweetness in the background when I nose just about any Laphroaig that I've had. And granted, my experience with Laphroaig is kind of basic like everybody else's. This is the first time I've had the quarter cask that I can remember. But there's that kind of dull sweetness back there. When you call it banana, that kind of puts a face on it. I've never really thought of it as banana. Definitely a full-bodied whiskey. The palate is deep, complex, and smoky, yet offers and surprises the palate with gentle sweetness. And that's true. There is kind of a gentle sweetness. I'd call it underlying sweetness. And the finish does linger. It's when you have something that's this smoky, and I can't even imagine what you're drinking. And I would love to try it someday, just to say that I did it. I don't know that I could sit down and drink a whole glass of it. But this the smoke lingers, and I've cheated on the pairing here a little bit, but I'm curious to hear how yours is.
Before I do, I'm going to tease a little bit. So these both these distilleries, of course, are Islay distilleries. They're kind of within a reasonable distance. Bruichladdich is on Islay. The spring that they use is the Octomore spring, which is why this particular dram is named the Octomore. They also use Scottish barley, so they're actually using Scottish barley, I think, either in part or in full, which is, you know, part of their... They want to employ Scots as much as possible in the making of the product. It's kind of cool, kind of romantic. Bruichladdich was founded in 1881. We've talked about them a lot on the show because, you know, there's a lot of really great Bruichladdich spirits out there. So it's on the north shore of Lochendal on Islay, and it's right near the town of Port Charlotte. So what's interesting, and I'm kind of losing my voice here, need more whiskey, but what's interesting to me, at 167 ppm on the palate, I would describe this as less smoke forward than a Lafroy quarter cask. How that's possible, I have no idea. It's very balanced. How you can stick 167 ppm in a whiskey like this at 57% ABV and make it still balanced is absolutely beyond me, because I get a lot of briny character and I get almost like a mesquite barbecue smoke. So it's almost, you know, when you have a smoker that, if you can imagine the smoke that's coming off of a smoker where you got those actual chips in there firing the smoker, but you were to bottle that. That's kind of what it tastes like, but dial the smoke back a little bit because it is balanced with that brininess. And so we've kind of gone through, or at least I've gone through sherry, heavily sherried and briny, and now I'm going to, you know, the super peaty, briny character, and all three are working so far. I'm going to take a couple more sips and let you talk about how that quarter cask is and clear my throat a little bit.
So I think we've figured out where the pairing, or at least I've figured out where the pairing for this Crux of Guild sits perfectly, and it's with something that's heavily peated. This peat brings out, there's some sweetness coming out of the guild now.
Yeah.
The spice on the retrohale has almost got kind of a sweetness to it. It's so smooth. Everything is so smooth right now. Yeah. And it's even smoothing out this this Lafroy quarter cask, which is surprisingly, it's got a little bit of sweetness to it. It's got a little bit of that brininess to it. There's a lot of depth of flavor here. It's not just smoke, like you were saying. It's definitely smoky. It's a bit more, and this kind of harkens me back to the last show that we did when I had that smoked beer where you take on the nose, it's like, whoa, baby. Like, I'm smelling, there's just burnt wood and tires and rubber and everything happening here. But then when you taste it, it's so much more delicate on the palate, and it seems weird to say this Lafroy quarter cask has a delicate smokiness to it, but I wouldn't know how else to explain it. There's that sweetness right up front. It's just the tip of the tongue. There's some brininess that hits the side of the tongue, and that smokiness just kind of takes over everything, right? But it's still, it takes over everything without taking over everything, if that makes sense. It's there, it's definitely, you can't ignore it, but it's not to the point where it's like, oh man, I have to put this down. It's smoky, but it's, I want to say delicate, but I don't know if that's the right term. It's just a very palatable smokiness. Yeah. That transitions so well with the cigar, where it brings out that earth, that oaky flavor that I was talking about. It feels a little bit bigger now, but it's still all very creamy and smooth. I'm getting a little bit of sweetness from the cigar as well. Like I said, on the retro, with that spice, there's a little bit of sweetness to it, almost like a cinnamon, like a sugared cinnamon spice is coming out. It's really, really nice. This is hands down the best pairing of the night, and I would want to do another show. Like, we're going to do 7 Crux Guild shows, but I want to do one that's where we're just doing just peated whiskeys, because this is, like, it doesn't even have to be anything exotic. We could just go with, like, a regular Oban and then Lagavulin 16 and then Lafroig, like, Lafroig 10, just a standard Lafroig, and just see how that kind of goes with that. But I think that smokiness, a little bit of brininess, some sweetness there, there's an awful lot going on. And like you were talking about that flavor wheel before, it's full now.
Yeah.
It's full, and they're overlapping in just the right amount of areas.
And I think to your point, why this works so well is that for me, Sherry is absolutely great, and it's harmonious, but it's neither complementary nor contrasting.
Exactly.
What makes this so phenomenal is this is 100% complementary, 100%. That smoke complements the creaminess and the spices in the cigar, and the brininess from the peated whiskey just serves to bring out some of the more, like, anytime you have saltiness, and I know Coop on Cigar Coop, Stogie Geeks, talks about saltiness, and it's just got enough saltiness to bring out some of the nuances in the cigar. Like, we talk about how citrus can sometimes be a palate cleanser. Well, in this case, the salt serves to almost supercharge your palate to bring out some of the nuances in the cigar you weren't otherwise tasting. And I think because it's transitioned to this great creamy, earthy, spicy component, again, the peated smoke, that you know, we're talking about all the meat in the food, that's what this whiskey really serves to supplement here, and it's beautifully complementary.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with the comments on salt. And that's been coming around the last few years. You see salted caramel and salted chocolate. And you think about it, you take a bite of, just try it at home. You take a little bite of chocolate and add a little flake of salt to it and take another bite. And it really does, it's like it supercharges the flavor, right? Even, I remember watching an episode of Modern Family where they were going to have hot chocolate milk, and the girl said, put a little pinch of salt in there, and it makes like a big difference. And it really does. I actually tried it. When you add a little bit of salt to things that are predominantly sweet, it just kind of supercharges that flavor. In this case, we're not adding salt to something that's predominantly sweet, because there's nothing predominantly sweet. There's sweetness here, but nothing predominantly sweet. But that salt really does kind of supercharge. Like I said, it wakes up the palate a little bit. And that smokiness just transitions so nicely into the earthy body of the cigar. It brings out some of that spice and some of that sweetness. And I can't get away from, like when I was a kid, when I'd make cinnamon toast, and you make toast, put a little bit of butter on there, not too much, just a little bit. You sprinkle just cinnamon, but put a little bit of sugar on there as well, just to enhance the sweetness a little bit. And that's that flavor that I get, not the toast, but the sugared cinnamon on the finish. This is a pairing where I feel like I need to be. It needs to be like a thunderstorm outside, but I'm in my library with my high back leather chair, and we're talking politics or something, and there's a fire going. And there's leather-bound books everywhere. You know, we're in some sort of exclusive club that neither one of us could get into. But that's how it just feels like an old-school, uber-masculine, just super pairing. That's the way that's the image that it conjures for me.
And I think, yeah, I think there's no question after having this Octomore and this Crux Guild, that we're absolutely going to have to do a Crux Guild show with exclusively peated whiskeys and just go run the gamut. Just go from, you know, light-bodied peated to big in your face to everything in between. And we've got a lot of peated whiskey. I know you've got a lot of peated whiskey left over. So we can definitely make that happen. But yeah, hands down winner of the night. Not that those sherry whiskeys weren't great, because it was. But when we talk about complimentary pairings, this is really it. Looking forward to some of our shows coming up in the next few weeks. Of course, we got a big one next week. Right off having Manolo Quesada on Cigar Chat, we're going to have his nephew, right? Terrence Riley is his nephew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Terrence Riley is going to join us next week for Oktoberfest. And that's always a great show. Terrence is extremely knowledgeable about tobacco, but he's also super geeky about beer, and that makes for a really fun show for us. We can do the Oktoberfest cigar. We can do some really great, you know, Oktoberfest style beers. Although I was looking through my local suppliers, and I'm gonna have to get creative, because I don't know that the Oktoberfest has made it down here. But that makes it fun. And who knows? Maybe I'll throw a curveball in there. But that's gonna come up next week on the 21st. So that'll be good. And I think we're probably gonna have a pre-record for you guys coming up on the 28th, because I am pretty busy with work. Tis the season of store opening for me, so I'll be busy in another town here opening up a store. We'll have a really great show for you. Of course, the format of the show has changed a little bit, you know, due to some of the changes at Google. They have eliminated some of the capabilities of Hangouts on Air, so fortunately we don't have a Q&A app, but you're welcome to ask your questions on CigarFederation.com's chat. You could even, you know, type it in the show page, or email your questions in to surgeon@CigarFederation.com or rob@CigarFederation.com. And then tomorrow night, we got a really good one. It's going to be pretty nutty. We've got Eric Espinoza from Lazona on with Logan. And, I mean, Those I mean, really, I just need to introduce the show, and I'm just let those guys talk for 58 minutes.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be at the ballpark tomorrow night, and I feel like I could host the show from my phone even while I'm working. Just say, hey, guys, welcome to Cigar Chat, and that's it.
That's it.
And, hey, thanks for joining us. You know, that's going to be a fun show. I'm actually wearing this is one of my favorite cigar T-shirts. This is a 601 shirt that they sent me that I really enjoy this one. Looking forward to that Oktoberfest show. I picked up a few of the Oktoberfest 2016 Das Brauhaus, the flying pig size, I don't know what else to call it, with the Nicaraguan blend. The 2015 was phenomenal. I've said this a bunch of times. I didn't do a top 10 last year. If I did, it would have been my number one cigar of the year. I have not smoked one of these yet, so I'm hoping that the 2016 lives up to that. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I've been looking around, and the Oktoberfest beers are hitting the shelves in my area. There's a Sierra Nevada Oktoberfest, and they did an Oktoberfest last year that was really good.
Yeah.
And I'm going to revisit that. And we'll get some of the standards, too, the Spaten and things of that nature. I'm, like I said, lucky enough, I've got a lot of German beer in my area, so I can hopefully pick up some really cool things. And you know Terrence is going to come through because he is an uber beer nerd. That's going to be a lot of fun. I loved having Terrence on the show. I always learn something about tobacco and something about beer when we do it. So that's one thing I look forward to every year. Yeah. Is doing the Oktoberfest show. And I'm just really hopeful. I think you're smoking like an old school Oktoberfest with some time on it.
Yeah, so
vintage.
Because of my timing down in Vegas, I tried to locate the 2016 Oktoberfest and kind of struck out because it was kind of the wrong time of the year. I think if I'd been there the week after, it would have been all over the place. So I went through my humidor and, you know, because we've got so much stock, or at least I've got so much stock, I know you have so much stock, I somehow managed to wrangle up, I believe, and Terrence will confirm, but I'm pretty sure it's a 2012
boom
Oktoberfest.
Mm.
I don't know how good it's going to be, but I can imagine it's going to be great.
It's going to be good.
If you haven't already, definitely check out the show with Manolo Quesada. That's a guy we could add on the show for 5 hours, and everyone would have been on the edge of their seat. The amount of stories, the amount of knowledge that guy has, 43, 45 years in the industry, his family's mm-hmm. been in tobacco for more than 130 years. That's a lot of experience. It's a great show. It was really interesting for me. He talked about a lot of stuff that we never talked about. So that might be a good primer for having Terrence on. But I'm really looking forward to that. That'll be next week, next Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as per usual. And I hope everyone enjoyed tonight's show. As we say in Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less. And, man, this Crux Guild sure has
so good, dude. To it. It's, I mean, so good.
I don't think
it's...
I'm going to be walking around anytime soon because...
It's funny. Like, you can see the grin on my face. Like, I'm pouring the rest of this this quarter cask. I've got a little bit left.
It's so good.
This pairing, dude, fucking forget about it, man.
And that quarter cask is so absurdly approachable. like when it's on sale, I think I can get that for like $37 Canadian.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, it's stupid cheap. Like, I think in the States it's probably around 43 to 45 Freedom dollars. But if you keep an eye on it, a lot of places will put it on sale certain times of the year when, you know, they need to push sales, $40 or $38. That's a hell of a deal because at 48% ABV and flavor for days, that's kind of one. Again, that's one of those bottles that always has a spot in my cabinet. Always, like as soon as that bottle runs out, or even that bottle's getting low, I've got a replacement bottle.
Yeah, I've been without Laphroaig for a while now, and I've been looking to remedy that, and I think I may do it with this quarter cask. I'm looking here, just at my local BevMo. They've got just the Laphroaig 10-year, which is just the basic. Is 47. It's on sale for 47. The quarter cask is on sale for 59. So it's a little bit more pricey here. Then I've got the 10-year cask strength is 75. And what about the Laphroaig Triple Wood? Have we done that?
I think I've featured it on a show. It's interesting because it's a lot more nuanced.
Mm.
It's a lot more nuanced. If you can get that one on sale, it's a hell of a deal. I don't know about $75 seems a little.
But well, it's
been a while.
The triple wood for me would be $67.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not bad
you
at
know.
All.
I think that, though, I do think that a bottle of this quarter cask is in the works because it's a little bit smoother. It's got a little bit, it's a bit more nuanced than just the standard Laphroaig 10-year. And I know that I'm going to be the only one drinking it because my wife's not into that. I know, like, when I buy a bottle of Lagavulin, which I'm glad I bought when I did because they had it at Costco for $55, which is just, that's like 50% off, dude.
Yeah.
That's such a screaming deal. And they don't have it anymore, so I'm glad that I bought it when I did. Although, I was there just this past week, and they have a lot of Japanese whiskey. They had one that I couldn't find a price for. They had the Hibiki Harmony, I think, was $67.
That's a great bottle.
Yeah, I think that there's one of those is in my future as well. All of my play money, not that there's a ton of it, but that's all going towards brewing these days. We're moving over to kegging. I've got Dana brewing. I got
nice.
The wife brewing. Nice. We made a batch of hard cider, and she is very, very excited because it was super easy, dude. You can make, if you have a bucket, like a food grade plastic bucket,
yep.
You can make hard cider. That's all you need. I went and bought 5 gallons of pasteurized apple juice, pressed apple juice, and a packet of champagne yeast, which you have to activate, which takes about 5 minutes of work, and then you just cover it with some tinfoil and walk away. All you do is you have to sanitize everything, you know, you need cleaners and things like that. But you pour everything into the bucket, you pitch the yeast. Before you pitch the yeast, you add a thawed out apple juice concentrate and a half a cup of brown sugar, and then you pitch the yeast, and that's it. That's all you have to do.
That's super easy.
And you let it sit for a couple weeks. I moved it into secondary, so you need another bucket or like a carboy, a plastic carboy is what I put it in, and tasted it. I need to back sweeten it a little bit, and you can add any kind of sweetener that's non-fermentable, like a non-sugar sweetener that you put in your coffee.
Yeah.
You just put a little bit of that in there, and in a couple weeks, it's going to be golden, and we're going to have it on tap at our Halloween party. And my wife is so excited that now we're setting up a kegerator or a keezer. We're making a keg. We're making taps out of a chest freezer, so we'll get some temperature control. And we bought some kegs, and I'm really excited, man, because putting things in kegs is so much better than bottling.
Yeah.
Bottling sucks. And in a keg, you can have things ready to go in a couple of days. In bottling, it takes like 5 or 6 weeks, depending on what you're bottling. So I'm really excited. And that's where all my expendable dollars are going. So maybe around Christmas, we'll look at adding a bottle. I need to add another bottle of the Glenmorangie La Santa, just because I really like that.
Yeah, it's so good.
And it's so approachable in price points, like $39
yeah.
for a sherry, very drinkable. It's perfect for the holidays for me. I mean, if we got family over, you're sitting around, you're by the fire or whatever, you're hanging out, you can have a couple of glasses of that, and it's not going to blow you away, but it's got a ton of flavor. It's just really, really approachable, and I love that sherry. So I have a feeling that a bottle of this quarter cask Laphroaig is going to be in the mix as well.
And it's a great standby for making some really funky cocktails as well.
You know, it's funny. We've been woo! Just got a little shiver there. We've been looking at some cocktails that have more of a smoky aspect because it's that time of year, right? And we want
yep.
a little bit more. We're getting
to be the fall. I mean,
yeah.
up here it's definitely fall.
Yeah, I mean, here it's been fall this last week.
Yep.
Although I've got my AC on now, which doesn't need to be on, but it's going to be back up in the mid 90s next week. But we always get the Indian summer around here.
Yeah,
October is always the best month. Around here. This is my favorite time of year. It's football, postseason baseball is happening, although the Giants are going to be on the outside looking in, I think. I'm planning the Halloween party, so it's a lot of fun, and we're getting in that mood. We've been watching Penny Dreadful. I don't know if you've ever watched that show, but it's pretty good, and a lot of Victorian horror, which is what's going on. Although, speaking of horror, if you like horror movies, dude, we watched The Conjuring 2. Are you...
Spooky?
Did you... Oh, did you watch the first one?
I don't know that I've watched The Conjuring. Laura's not typically a big fan of... she tends to avoid the scary stuff. Mm. So I usually watch the scary stuff on my own. I have not watched The Conjuring one yet.
The Conjuring, that movie will put some hair on your ass, man. I'm telling you. I love being scared. I love it. Watching a scary movie, it's like so much fun for me. I'm not really into the gore and like the torture stuff, like Hostel and things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm into the horror and like the slasher movies, even Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, that kind of thing. I dig scary movies. But I grew up Catholic. I was raised Catholic. And anything that, like The Exorcist is the scariest movie I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
And it just...
psychological terror.
It's scary. And plus, if you grow up with that background, it's like, ugh, there's... Yeah. And The Conjuring, both of them have that kind of exorcism, demons and things. But the second one, oh, man... The first one was great, one of the best horror movies I've ever seen, and I didn't think that they could make a better one, and somehow they did. And these are all quote-unquote true stories, depending on what you believe in, but it was set in 77, the year I was born, so it was in England, which I've never been to, but man, somehow it's scary as hell, and I freaking love it. Luckily, Dana likes the scary movies too, so that works out well.
Tis the season.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I've got a little bit of light left here because we're starting a little bit late. And, of course, this is the season where I'm losing about 10 or 15 minutes of light.
Let's get into those
night.
Picks.
So, first of all, email your picks, surgeon@cigarfederation.com, if you want to be a part of this. It's just for fun. Dave Burke from, Dave, I've completely forgotten your podcast, Cigar Jukebox out of Australia. Great podcast. If you don't listen to it, you should. It's a great podcast, especially if you like music. Dave does an interesting and unique thing on the marketplace where he pairs cigars with music, and I don't think there's anyone else out there doing it. It's a great show. Dave's a great host. Been on the show a few times. We actually should figure out some way to get Dave on the pairing show. I think that'd be a lot of fun, although he'd be getting shmammered at 8 in the morning Australian time, but he's a good Australian character. So he emailed in his picks, and boy, what a dirty Australian, because he ended up beating the two of us.
No.
Yeah.
Is there a timestamp on the email?
There is a timestamp on the email. He didn't get his pick in for Thursday, although I feel like if he had gotten his pick in for Thursday, he probably would have picked the Broncos to win. Dave went 12 for 16, which, you know, missing that, so it's really 12 for 15. Accurately predicted the win for the Packers, Chiefs, Raiders, Bengals. Somehow picked the Browns over the Eagles. Dave, come on. Browns over the Eagles. You pick all these great picks and you pick the Browns over the Eagles. For shame. Got the Vikings, got the Texans, got the Ravens, got the Bucks over the Falcons, got the Seahawks. I mean, that was kind of a no-brainer. Giants. Went with the Colts over the Lions, fell into that trap like a lot of people.
we both did.
You know, like us, picked the Cards over the Patriots. That was a disappointment. Steelers and your 49ers. So
he picked the Niners. I didn't even pick the Niners.
I didn't even pick the Niners. So you went 12 for 15. I went 11 for 16. You went 9 for 16. Although I feel like I goaded you into some of those picks.
I went 9 for 16.
You went 9 for 16.
I need to redeem myself this week.
You need to redeem yourself. I would just like to say that in my pick'em pool for the week, I ended up scoring 2 points on the Vikings pick. There's a lot of people that went for the Titans, and Vikings won, and no one in my pool picked the Vikings to win. So I got my 2 points and ended up taking the week, which I was pretty excited about. Of course, as it always happens every year, I start out strong in the first week, and then just completely shit the bed for the rest of the season. So hopefully I can remain consistent for the rest of the season. But let's get after it.
Let's do it. I would like to say, while you're getting ready to get after it,
Roger that.
We have the Cigar Media Association Fantasy Football League, which I drafted the team during our show last week.
How did we do in week one?
Week one, we dominated, bro.
Nice.
If I we played against in week one, let me look
in
at
your,
the
in your face
in the scoreboard. Week one, we played against Sean at Nice Tight Ash, and sorry, Sean, but we kind of crushed you, bro. 157-120.
Woo!
And not only did we crush, Sean actually had the fourth most points in the league. Cigar Federation with 157 led the league in scoring, followed closely by Matthew Hall from Cigar Wars. So if we look at the just a quick box score here, We had Roethlisberger got us 22.
Hell yeah.
David Johnson, who we keenly drafted over Devontae Freeman, had 22 points. LeSean McCoy came in with 16. The pick of the week for us, and the number one pick that we had, was A.J. Green, came in with 36 points. Alshon Jeffrey at 14. Greg Olsen, our tight end, at 14. In our flex position, I decided to play Marvin Jones, wide receiver for Detroit against Indianapolis. He came in with 12. Seahawks defense came in with 12. And our kicker, Justin Tucker, came in with 9. And the only play that we could have done a little bit better on is if I would have played Jeremy Langford at the flex position, I would have got an extra point. But to Sean Pratt's credit, maybe not, he had a lot of points on his bench. His bench actually outscored his team.
Ouch.
He had Andrew Luck at 35 points on his bench, Willie Snead at 32 on his bench, and Theo Riddick at 27 on his bench. So had he played those guys, it would have been a different outcome, I think. But we're 1-0, Cigar Federation kind of dominating the Cigar Media Association Fantasy Football League. So happy about that.
Well, if my strong recommendation for this week, if someone hasn't picked up the Jets defense, this would be the week to start. Jets defense, I don't know if they did really well or better than Seahawks in points overall, but I think they ended up leading the league in sacks with 7 sacks. So this might be a good week to start them, because I think they're going to get after the Bills defense, or Bills offensive line, really aggressively this season, or this game, I should say. Yeah, let's get after it. So unfortunately, during Cigar Chat, it's going to be my game, Jets on the road versus the Buffalo Bills. Score is going to be a really close game. Hopefully Folk doesn't shit the bed again and completely miss 4 points, leave 4 points on the table, which is just an embarrassment. Jets have to win it. It's a divisional game. They're on the road. I feel like they're a little embarrassed after last week's performance. This is going to be a defensive game all day long. I got to go with my home team, even though I picked against them last week. I'm going Jets over the Bills.
You know, it's a battle of 0-1 teams. I picked Buffalo last week, and looks like Sammy Watkins may not play this week. I think I'm going to stick with Buffalo. It's going to be a ball control ground game. I think
turnover game.
I'm looking for my boy LeSean McCoy to step it up and get a couple scores. I'm going to go with Buffalo. We're disagreeing right off the bat.
Nice.
I'm taking the home team.
So Carolina looking to redeem themselves at home against your 49ers. So 49ers are traveling. It's not a short week for them. It's a Sunday morning game, 49ers against the Panthers. That's a tough call for me, because I feel like the 49ers played a really great game, but it was against the Rams, and the Rams came out really soft. Panthers are going to come out with a chip on their shoulder, especially after Cam got beat up by the Broncos defense. I'm going to stick with Carolina this week.
This is a sucker game. I could get sucked into picking the 49ers. The one thing that I'll take, the Rams are horrible. The Rams are an awful team.
Terrible.
They're terrible. The one thing that I gleaned from that game, which I didn't get to watch because I was at the ballpark, I did watch the highlights, is the 49ers offensive line kept the Rams defensive line, which is a great defensive line, in check.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting. If you can give, and Blaine Gabbert is not a great quarterback, but if you give him that much time, he's going to be able to find somebody open.
Yeah.
It's an interesting game. I'd love to pick the 49ers. I can't. I got to pick Carolina.
Roger that. So next up on Sunday, Baltimore Ravens travel to Cleveland. I don't think I need to say much about that. Ravens are going to beat the Browns.
Yeah, Baltimore, move on.
Now, what I'm torn about is week 4, Tennessee Titans on the road to face the Detroit Lions at home. Detroit coming off of a big win. You know, I called that one, but it was a very, very close game right down to the last, right down to the last minute, where Stafford just, decided he was going to win, and he just marched the ball downfield in 3 plays, and they won with a field goal. I'm going to go with my gut and go with the Lions again over the Titans.
Yeah, I'll take Detroit in that game too.
Now, I'm torn on week game 4, Kansas City Chiefs, who started out super soft against San Diego. I thought I was going to get embarrassed on that pick, and then San Diego just completely fell apart and Kansas City came back, bro, you can't lose a game when you're up. I think the Chargers were up like 4 touchdowns and just completely shit the bed. But the Texans offense didn't really look amazing last week. I think it was, it really didn't look that amazing. So I think if the Chiefs can keep their shit together and play 2 halves of a game, I think the Chiefs are going to go over on the Texans, even on the road. I'm going with the Chiefs.
Yeah, I feel like we're getting sucked into last year where we kept picking the Chiefs and they kept losing. and then when we stopped picking them, they kept winning.
Yeah,
I feel like I don't know what to make of teams like the Texans and Tennessee, and there's probably another team I can throw into this. Tampa Bay. I don't know what to make of those teams, but I feel like Kansas City's got a decent defense. I don't know what Alex Smith can control the ball. They had a good offensive showing. I'm going to go with Kansas City as well.
Trap game of the week. Now that we're high on the Patriots showed that even missing 2 offensive linemen, their running back, their quarterback, Gronkowski. Now, I'm told Gronkowski may be back for this game, and I feel like this could make the difference. Divisional matchup, Miami on the road against the Patriots at home. The Patriots are an impossible team at home. Even with Brady out, seeing their showing last week against arguably one of the better teams in the league, I got to go with the Patriots on this one.
This is a tough one, man. I actually watched some of that game. Miami against Seattle. Miami's defense looked pretty good. Their D looked strong. Their offense did not. it's a tough game. My gut says just go with the Patriots because they're at home. Like you say, you can't beat the Patriots at home. So I could quarterback the Patriots at home. We'd still probably win. Mm-hmm. I think you're probably right. I want to take Miami, but I'm not going to. I'll take
smart,
the Patriots.
Smart pick says Patriots. The Saints, who got beat last week, phenomenal game. The Raiders showed up all day long. But they're on the road this week against the Giants, who squeaked out a win against the Cowboys. It was not a great showing for the Giants. I got to go Saints on this one.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Saints, too. I know I took the Raiders last week. I think I got that one right. But I think the Saints just have so much more firepower than the Giants do.
Interesting divisional matchup game, Cincinnati Bengals versus Pittsburgh Steelers. Mm-hmm. Other than the Browns, they're all tied at 1-0. Steelers came off a great game. They looked good. Again, it's early in the season. They don't really have any injuries yet. So Steelers at home,